This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
This week on Columbia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, we're going to be talking to Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics about the upcoming elections in Colombia, the presidential elections, and the miasma of corruption and gossip and so on that is currently surrounding these very interesting, very corrupt elections. So we'll be talking all about politics with Kevin Howlett on Columbia Calling today on the Overseas Radio Network.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
Where are the businesses for sale that allow you to be your own boss on your own terms, wherever in the world you choose? OverseasVentures.com. Overseas Ventures is the first business listing directory of its kind. Our focus is to provide a personalized experience for those looking to invest in overseas opportunities. Overseas Ventures is the first website dedicated solely for the global entrepreneur in mind. Check us out now at OverseasVentures.com to dream, own, and live a new life abroad.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Yes, it's that time of the week again, folks. It's Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. As always, please get in touch. That's www.columbiacallingradio.com. And as promised, many weeks ago, I said we were going to have a show that's going to focus on the politics of what's going on right now here in Colombia, because, well, you know, May 25th, we've got the elections coming up, the presidential elections, and some of you out there either may not have read anything because there seems to be no debate, or just may not know what's going on. So I've got three-time interviewee on the show, Kevin Howlett of Columbia-Politics.com, you know, the only English website out there dedicated to Colombian politics. Oh, he's here, he's on the show, he's back in the country, and we're going to talk about everything to do with the political situation in Colombia. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thanks, good to be back.
Perfect. Now, listen, we've got the elections. May 25th, President Santos running for re-election. The closest front-runner, I guess, is Enrique Peñalosa. And then you've sort of got the voto en blanco, which is what would be like the spoiled vote. And then after that, there's this mishmash of sort of smaller parties, the Central Democratico with Oscar Zuluaga, so the Uribe party, and then, let's say, the Liberals and the Polo Democratico and everything. I mean, I've never seen an election like this. I've observed some elections here in Colombia and a lot all over Latin America, but in truth, it just doesn't seem to be anything taking place or any, like, political manifesto.
No, that's a pretty fair assessment. This election really ought to be exciting for a number of reasons. The peace process with the FARC. Colombia is emerging as a bit of a world player. It's on the way up. It should be about the future of Colombia. Okay, now we're going to sign peace with the FARC. What are we going to do in post-conflict? How are we going to create the right sort of education for the nation? How are we going to ensure that the economy continues to grow? It ought to be a very issues-led campaign, but it isn't, you're right. It's also interesting because it's the first ever competitive re-election. By that I mean, before Uribe was elected, re-elected in 2006, presidents weren't allowed to run for two terms. You had 1 4-year shot at it, and that was your lot.
Yeah.
As said in the Constitution of 91, he changed that, but he was really, when he went for a re-election, he was facing virtually no opposition. Carlos Gaviria, who was the left-wing candidate for the Polo, never really stood a chance. So Uribe was an absolute shoo-in. This, however, is the first time that Colombians get to re-elect a president in a competitive situation. So it really ought to be hugely interesting and hugely competitive, but it isn't.
It isn't at all. I mean, that's the thing. It just seems to trundle ahead.
Yeah, there's a sense of inevitability about it. I get the sense with Santos that you would almost prefer that there wasn't such a thing as an election and he could just get on with it and run and have another 4 years in office. Certainly his approach to debating, for example, suggests that. I mean, he has flatly refused, as has Enrique Peñalosa, who you mentioned as the possible, the only real, perhaps, alternative to Santos at this particular moment. They have both refused to debate in public on a number of different platforms when the other presidential candidates have been there, which is, to my mind as a Democrat, rather shocking. If you can't go out and face the public and explain your policies, then frankly you don't deserve the vote. You asked about who the candidates are and what sort of profile they have and what their chances are. Santos is clearly the front runner. I mean, he has the CEO, which is an important political website here, pretty much one of the very few independent websites that analyses politics here, has said that despite the fact that Santos has pretty much all the national media on his side, for family connections and for many other reasons as well, despite the fact that he has all the political class on his side, so we're talking about the 94% of Congress that he's enjoyed over the last few years, and the what they call the National Unity Party, which is formed up of the Liberal Party, the U Party, and also the Cambio Radical and elements of the Green Party, they're all supporting him. Despite the fact he's got all this and a huge great wad of state cash that he can flash around, he is still unable to get above 25% in the polls. Now, in the US, they always say that if a president wants to be re-elected, if he falls below the 50% approval rating, he's stuffed. He's a lame duck, he's not going to win. Santos has been flatlining on 25%. That is a pathetically low number for months now, and he's not going, and it doesn't seem like he's going north. The only prospect of it happening is perhaps going south.
And he controls the press too, and the press is putting him there at 25%.
Exactly. He controls all that. The press is admitting that that's the case. Now, I said, well, he's going to win. So how can he win if he's got 25%? Is a very good question, but it looks like he will win because all the others have got even less. So the vote is split between so many different people. You've got a few candidates on the left. You've got Clara Lopez, who's the Polo Democratic. She's very left-wing. Mm-hmm. You've got Enrique Peñalosa, who flirts between being left-wing and right-wing on depending on the policy. Mm-hmm. He's kind of getting around about 10, 12, 15%, depending on which poll you look at. Oscar Iván Zuluaga, who you mentioned, who's the Uribista, the right-wing candidate, effectively returning to the regime that you had before Santos. He as well is kind of about 10, 12%, something like that. And you have another set of candidates. But the real surprise so far, well, it really will not to be a surprise given the choice that the Colombians have before them, is the fact that the Voto en Blanco, or the spoiled ballot paper, has been registering up to 20, 30% in the polls. That some polls have said that there are more people likely to vote spoiling their ballot paper than they are to vote Santos. Now, I suspect that will fall down when the elections come, but it's all to play for in some sense, but Santos is the only candidate that has any type of polling data that looks relatively decent. Now, 25 looks terrible to you and me, but compared to 6, 10, 12, 15, it looks okay.
So just quickly jumping in, I mean, can you imagine 30% of the country lining up lining up and voting in blanco, so spoiling their vote? I mean, it's a huge amount. I mean, that takes a lot of chutzpah for that much. I think as you say, it will fall down. I don't think that will come to it. But then who are they going to vote for? I don't know. It's absolutely mind boggling, this election. Santos, who is seemingly not in control of the country whatsoever, and we'll address this in a second because we'll come back to it. Peñalosa, who, you know, you would think as the nearest rival should be standing up to hammer Santos at every turn, but doesn't do interviews either, really. You know, I feel that he's a bit more of a Marcos character and could only win a city sort of thing. I don't think if you went out into the countryside, anyone would know who he was. This urbanist who was born in Washington D.C. In fact, there you go, nice little stat for you. I just don't know. So anyway, we're going to come back. We're here on Columbia Calling, but we're going to come back with Kevin Howlett and discuss further the situation here in Columbia regarding the politics. Don't go away.
OverseasRadio.com. Broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.justlanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's justlanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business, invest in real estate. What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're talking politics here in Columbia. I've got with me here in the studio Kevin Howlett of ColumbiaPolitics.com. It's the English website for anything you ever wanted to know about politics in Colombia. So, and we're talking about the elections, May 25th, big elections here in Colombia. We were discussing that. We've given a little bit of a background on who are the presidential candidates, but in all reality, there are two. But before we delve into the sort of the murky realities of Colombian of these characters, Kevin, explain to us a little bit how the whole political process, how the presidential elections are, how they work here in Colombia.
Yeah, well, there's about 33 odd million people that that can vote. It'll probably be half of those that will actually turn out, perhaps. Depends. It's always on a Sunday, so it gets, if you know Bogota and if you know what Colombian culture is like, Sunday is very much a family day, so it's often very difficult to get people out, especially if it's raining. Anyway, so 33 odd million people that can potentially vote. You might get a turnout 50% if you're lucky. This illusion suggests that it may well go below that. You have a first round. You have theoretically two potential rounds. In the first round, which is on the 25th of May, if one candidate gets above 50%, then they are elected. If they get less than 50% of the vote, then it goes to a second round runoff between him or her and the second place candidate, and that takes place a further 4 weeks or so later. So what you would imagine is that as the polls are looking, as we're talking, if Santos is the one that's leading at the moment and on 25%, mm-hmm. the idea that it's almost a guarantee, but Colombia, nothing is ever guaranteed, that it would go to a second round, and then he would face perhaps Enrique Peñalosa or perhaps Oscar Iván Zuluaga. Mm-hmm. Or someone else might surprise us.
Well, yeah, and so it's a first past the post, really, if it to win outright, 50%.
Yeah.
And if no one comes in second, let's say if it, the spoiled vote comes in second?
Well, the spoiled vote only really comes into play if it gets more than 50%.
Ah, okay.
It has to get an absolute majority, and then the elections are recalled. Otherwise, it's an irrelevance in some ways. It's relevant in the sense that it would very much question the legitimacy of the eventual president. You know, if the spoiled ballots are registering something like 15-20%, whereas last time they represented something like 2%, then it would be a major question mark over the legitimacy. But in terms of the process, it would be it would just go to the second person.
All right. And if this were to be the case, would it be something that Colombians, let's say the whole process, the electoral process, could demand elections sooner on than the 4-year term if something like that happened?
Well, anything's possible in Colombia. Frankly, well, a lot of people are talking about, even President Santos's health has suggested that he may only be there for 2 years. Now, this hasn't been picked up too much, but he's suggested that once he gets elected, he may call a... Because he doesn't really like the idea of the re-election. Obviously, he likes it for himself, but for as a concept, as an idea, he doesn't like it. I think it's personally very democratic to be able to vote for someone again.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like the article. He doesn't like the idea of it being there. So there's talk that he will introduce an amendment in Congress that replaces the idea of the re-election with a one term fixed term of 6 years, moving from 4 years to 6 years. So that it could happen. So the answer is yes, anything could happen, because the Constitution was only created in 1991, but it has amendments every year. I mean, the United States Constitution has only had a few additional amendments since it was written, but Colombia's Constitution in 91 has a number of amendments each year. So anything can happen. All they need to do is create a constituyente, which is what the FARC, of course, are proposing as well. So a kind of a special assembly, a special constituent assembly, at which you discuss things like voting terms, political reform. Political reform is on President Santos's agenda. He does want to pursue it. So we could well see something quite different next time. The next elections are scheduled for 2018, but they could be 2016.
You've done something very interesting there. It reminds me of back in the UK with Tony Blair, when he more or less said he was opting out after a couple of years to hand over to Gordon Brown, and which kind of just
that
left
went
this,
well.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of just left everything in this limbo, because it just meant that nothing was going to get done. We're waiting for the next guy. You know, we're waiting. And I don't know if I like 6 years, personally. That's a long time with a president.
6 years of a good president is not long enough.
Yeah, sure.
And 6 years of a bad president is far too long.
It just smacks of Chavez, though.
The thing is, if you have such a light approach to the Constitution, if you're amending it every 5 seconds, it doesn't really generate the stability that you need. So, I mean, I wouldn't like that at all. I think, though, if you look at the... in terms of characters to look out for, Herman Vargas Lleras, who is President Santos's vice presidential running mate, is perhaps the most important character of the next 6-8 years. Yeah. Why? Because if he's elected, he'll be the vice president and will actually be, I think, a kind of prime minister. And I think President Santos will be devote himself to more sort of international circuit, which is what he's best at, really.
Yeah.
And Vargas Lleras, who's a very well-known minister and good at delivering, will probably take over the reins in some of the departments. Also, the idea is then that Santos would hand on handily to Vargas Lleras. That's the deal that they are rumoured to have done. Again, it sounds a bit like Blair and Brown, where they strike these deals before
in
a restaurant in Islington, except it's probably in Rosales or El Nogal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so on that basis, Vargas Lleras could be president in 2016 or 2018.
But Vargas Lleras also has in his armour, let's say, he's recognised. I mean, you could go down to Putumayo and they would know who Vargas Lleras is.
He's popular.
Yeah, which is a big difference from the other politicians running for office at the moment. So, but you mentioned something earlier on, and you said, this constituent, and you mentioned the FARC, which, tethers quite nicely in, because The FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, you know, we all know who they are, 50-odd years in a war against the establishment and so on. They're currently in peace dialogues with the government there in Havana, Cuba. This has been going on since 2012. I mean, Santos, one of his main campaign sort of promises is peace. He said in the BBC the other day he wants to be remembered as the president who brings peace to Colombia. I guess he's suggesting that if you don't vote for him, the peace dialogues, yes, will just be, you know, basically erased.
That's what he wants to do, yeah. He tries to... It's slightly Orwellian, isn't it? You know, if you don't vote for me, you won't get peace.
Yeah.
His slogan... has two slogans. One of them was Unidos por la Paz. So,
yeah.
You know, we're united to pursue peace. Now, it's true, obviously, that he's the guy that set it up, and I think... You know, if Santos is remembered for anything, it will be for the bravery with which he entered into the peace talks with the FARC,
yeah.
As a radical departure from the previous government. And he should be applauded for that. If you don't agree with anything else he's done, that's probably something you should pick on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it helps perhaps to have a continuity in the peace talks. You know, when you've got any negotiations, the one side needs to believe that the other side can deliver. And Santos has that established relationship with the FARC negotiators. However, the argument that if he's not there, then we can't continue with the talks is a totally false one, totally erroneous, because Peñalosa has said, well, I agree with him, and I'll even stick with exactly the same team. Oscar Iván Zuluaga, who the Uribistas candidates, who have been very much opposed to the peace process, is very much moving towards, so he's sort of calmed his rhetoric on that. So I wouldn't be surprised if even they continued with them in a certain way. So Santos would like to be the candidate of peace, but I think that's stretching it far too far. But I would say it probably helps to have him there ever so slightly. But then again, a new face, Peñalosa, might breathe new life into it. You said it has been going on since 2012. We talked about it a couple of times on this programme. At the moment, it seems to be kind of not even really bubbling along. There seems to be a lot of... not a lot is happening, really. It was supposed to be a peace express. It's supposed to happen, as Santos called it. It's supposed to happen, be concluded within a year. But we're not really further on with it than we were nine months ago when we last spoke on this programme. So I don't think the election... I think either Santos or Peñalosa, which are the most likely to win, they're going to stick with the peace process as it is.
I think that's very important. I will just mention that the peace dialogues in Cuba at the moment are entering the 24th round, and it's about illicit drugs, cocaine, the production of cocaine and everything else, and it's been overshadowed, unfortunately, by some politicking there in the background about negative campaigning about what could happen if the FARC were to gain some sort of power, and the army would be then reduced and the police would then be reduced. So there's some negative campaigning around that. But these are points that we'll come to in the next section. We're talking to Kevin Howlett of Colombia-Politics.com. I'm Richard McCall. Please don't go away.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
Attention investors, Nagel & Associates and the Overseas Radio Network are sponsoring a one-of-a-kind asset protection and global investment conference this August aboard the celebrity cruise ship, the Constellation. This 12-night cruise will feature the best of Northern European capitals, including Amsterdam, Stockholm, Berlin, Tallinn, Helsinki, Copenhagen, and the highlight of the cruise, St. Petersburg. You will experience the breathtaking scenery of Northern Europe while discovering cutting-edge developments in asset protection and global investment strategies. In this small group setting, you'll learn from renowned international experts and then get to spend quality time as fellow passengers really get to know them and letting them know you and how their expertise might be of great benefit to you and your future. Not only that, but our conference is headlined by Jack Wheeler, who the Washington Post refers to as the real-life Indiana Jones. Come and get to know Jack and his wife, Rebel, and enjoy some adventure stories on the high seas. Registration fees are $13.99 for a single and only $19.99 per couple. Sign up before May 30th, and you'll receive a $300 discount on your registration fees. Register now by calling 1-888-888-888. 914-269-8848 or sending an email to rachel@hemispheres.com. We hope to see you aboard.
This is Kathleen Petticord and Leif Simon with the Live and Invest Overseas Minute on the Overseas Radio Network. Are you looking to rent overseas? Before you log online, here are some tips that can save you a lot of time and help ensure that you get the best deal possible on your rental wherever in the world you're looking to live.
So finding an apartment to rent overseas should be done at the local level. Looking on the internet, you're going to find English advertisements that are easier to find a rental for you, but those are going to be priced for the foreign market. To get to the local market, you want to get your feet on the ground and take a look.
Exactly. To get a good deal, you've got to shop beyond the internet market. And to do that, you've got to have your feet on the ground, either yours or those of a reliable local contact you trust. And you should enlist the help of an attorney to review the rental contract.
Also, you need to keep in mind that the local contract needs to be in the local language to be legal. So you'll want an English language translation, but you're going to have to sign a local language contract, especially in the Latin American countries.
For more information on making the leap overseas, visit us online at liveandinvestoverseas.com.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking to Kevin Howlett of Columbia-Politics.com. And we're talking about the elections. And we've got pretty deep into it. And you will have learned how the electoral process takes place, what the elections entail. As you said, Kevin, elections are on a Sunday here. The Saturday prior to that, usually the Friday as well, they create the ley seca, the dry law, so you can't have a drink. You know, nowhere can sell alcohol. No bars can sell alcohol after a certain hour. So everyone just stockpiles their booze and has an even bigger party. So I think when I turn up, I'm going to walk down on May 25th and watch people voting in various areas and take some photos. You know, I'm naturally curious about these things. In my mind, everyone's hungover, but that's just an anecdote, neither here nor there. But we're going to move back onto the main political crux of this chat that we're having today. And now, President Santos, he's had an awful year of it. I mean, I'm not going to lie about this. He's had a dreadful year of it. I mean, we could name several scandals that have taken place. I finished off the last segment of the show saying that this 24th round of peace dialogues is overshadowed by negative campaigning on the part of the Centro Democratico. These are the conservatives who are more or less saying that... suggesting that there is a secret negotiation taking place in Cuba to reduce the number of members of the armed forces and the police force. And of course, there was also the mention that the police pensions will be given to ex-FARC members. And it's a negative campaigning that we're all used to, but this is one thing, and this is overshadowing Santos's legacy, of course, because he wants to be the president of peace. But since the 2014 has rolled round, Santos has really... I mean, were he in any other country, he might not still be in power after some of the scandals. I mean, what do you have to say about this?
Well, I think in many countries, there would be a significant movement to remove him from power, I'll put it that way. There's plenty of scandals. There's the Trussaz, which is the wiretapping scandal, which makes Watergate look like child's play, frankly. And then there's the Mena Malin or Jam scandal, which is effectively talks about the use of public resources, taxpayers' money, to fund... Allegedly, political campaigns and so on. So he's had a hell of a lot of scandals. Now, even the former Attorney General, Vivian Morales, who was a candidate in the Senate elections, called the last elections, the Congress elections, she said of them that there's never been before such a level of corruption. Now, Colombia is not known as being a corruption-free country, unfortunately. It does very badly on the transparency scale. It's not as bad as many countries, but it's certainly got a hell of a lot to do to improve in that area. Many other people have said that corruption itself is kind of the most expensive tax that Colombians have to pay. So if the Attorney General is saying that, you're in trouble. Santos was accused also of using $1.5 billion of taxpayers' money to provide what they call these cupos indicativos, which some of those are positions in government, and some of the money is supposed to go to congresistas or congressmen, if you like, to build infrastructure in their particular part of the country. Now, it sounds okay. You know, you get given a certain amount of money and you go away and you develop a bridge in your town and so on and so forth. But the problem is, the argument is that there's no transparency on there, that you can't see where their money's gone. So $1.5 billion dollars is supposed to have been sent to all these sort of Congress people in exchange for their support of Santos in the elections coming up. So in most countries, if you had a president that was accused of using that amount of money, there'd either be a huge great investigation or he'd be kicked out. Now, I don't know whether to what extent it is corruption, I don't know to what extent it's true. It's just when you read all the commentators, when you read all the analysis, even the political class themselves admit that that's happening. There was one guy who sort of operates in your part of the world towards Mompos. Musa is well known as.
It's from Cordoba, isn't he? From Montería.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Cattle country.
Exactly. Now, he is supposed to have been given, allegedly, again, $20
billion. $20
billion? No, sorry, million.
$20 million.
So it's 47 billion pesos. Uh-huh. So, yeah, around $20 million between 2012 and 2014.
Just to shore up the coast.
Well, you know, to invest in the amazing infrastructure that we see in the coast. Mm. Now, interestingly, and perhaps not surprisingly, his vote in 2014 compared to 2010 increased by 134%. Now, it may well be that he's an amazingly popular congressman. It may well be that people flocked out to him because of all the bridges he built and so on. Or it may be something else. People are suggesting that everyone in the political class is suggesting that that is an example of how taxpayers' money is being used, being directed by the head of state or people associated with the head of state to support political campaigning. Now, again, it's difficult to know how much of it's true, how much of it's politics, but there is a bit of a whiff around it.
It's a lot of money.
This is not one of the richest countries in the world.
No.
And even if it were,
it's still a lot of money. Now, so these are public funds that are just being used, well, let's say, allegedly, in the grand political game. I mean, it's very tough to understand and get these, you know, one's head around this. So these figures, I mean, we're looking at vast sums of money. What is the top amount of money that you can receive in a campaign donation for example in the UK undeclared? Is it like 50,000 or something?
It's something minuscule. Yeah. And even then you have to, in the UK there's a set limit of expenditure, and it's all very well audited. There is a set limit here for expenditure, yeah, as well, and it is audited to a fashion, but some congressmen have failed even to hand in their receipts, so there we are.
So that's the sort of point I'm getting at. It's just like there's no real accounts. I mean,
there's no real accounts. It's difficult to know where the money's been spent. There are certain. I mean, we don't want to suggest that all the politicians are in on this, because there's a lot of really good politicians that were elected. When I say a lot, there's a number of really good politicians that were elected, and unfortunately for the nation, for Colombians, for anyone, it's just depressing when you see these figures flying around and this level of alleged corruption. It just delegitimizes the entire process, and that's why I think one of the main reasons why you get such poor turnout. There was only something like 43% of people that turned out in the last congressional elections, and I said maybe 50% will turn out for the presidential elections. The political system here is held in such low esteem because of people like the ones I've mentioned before and others, that it's difficult to see how it can recover. What Santos needs to do, or whoever the next president needs to do, is be incredibly committed to stamping out corruption, because I'm sure that Colombia, if it can sort out its corruption problem, will do hugely better in all senses, in all senses of the economy and politics.
So, of course, Santos, when he came into power, was one of the key promises.
Well, it was to stamp out.
And now that you've got the former Attorney General saying that the most corrupt elections that, you know, pretty much in living history or living memory.
And they don't have a great history of corruption-free elections as it is. It is worrying when you get people like that making the point. Yeah. And again, on the Silla Vacía point. This is this website that I've mentioned before that do critical analysis, and they don't have a particular axe to grind. They're not left wing or right wing particularly. Now they showed how the whole corruption works. So if you think of about $24, that's how much it costs to buy a vote in certain regions mm-hmm. of the country, allegedly. It's 50,000 pesos.
Yeah.
Something in that region. It was going, the votes were going for 100,000 in certain other areas. So what happens is that literally, allegedly again, the international observers, the UN's international observers said that 37% of the municipals of Colombia were under threat of corruption. Mm-hmm. And I think their eventual conclusion was that around that sort of level of figure were experienced incidences of corruption. So what happens is that if you go and look on CMSEI and look up how to win an election in Spanish, como ganar las elecciones, you will see they set out a guidebook, effectively, for how these people use the mermelada. So it's the tragedy is that if it's so openly talked about by the commentaria, by the political class, that it still happens.
Yeah. Now you said it, this money is given out, it's sort of distributed to the regions to you know, for construction, for infrastructure.
Which does happen in some places, yeah, absolutely.
Now, if we talk about my region, because, you know, around Mompós and the Depresión and the Costa and stuff, so what we end up seeing is that around these sort of like more marginal towns, you get campaign promises of a new highway and 1 kilometer built, and then that's it. And then it waits for another 4, 6, 7, 8 years until the next kilometer is built. But then that first kilometer that has been built hasn't been maintained either, because it was just a promise for that moment in time. And so then the fissures have opened, the cracks are there. So it's actually even harder to drive on these pieces of tarmac than it is on dirt. I mean, because they're so unlevel. So it's just incredibly frustrating. And you can get why there's this disconnect between the people and the politicians, because, like as you said on a couple of occasions, there's this just inevitability. The people are just resigned to the fact that these politicians will stay in their roles. Maybe one or two will change, but how is it going to be of benefit to the smallholder with his two cattle, six chickens and 3 hectares of land?
Well, they say here, the Colombians have a phrase which is los mismos con las mismas, which is the same people with the same solutions, in inverted commas. And it was ever thus. You look at Santos and, you look at his family, presidents in his family. His cousin wants to run for mayor of Bogota. You look at Vargas Lleras, who I mentioned was the VP candidate. If you look at his family, you can see many presidents there. Lleras Camargo, for example. So there's a sense that, well, nothing's going to change, so why bother voting? I mean, I teach at the university here, and it is depressing when you speak to young adults who are enthused and interested in politics, but they are just... they despair of what they have in front of them and the opportunity that they have to change the way that the nation works. I think I am optimistic, and I think this will change. I think this is a new generation, and this will be the generation of peace when the peace agreement is finally signed, and they will demand a hell of a lot more of their politicians. And that is a good thing, because at the moment the politicians get away with too much, with too little transparency and too little power in the hands of the individual. That's not healthy for the nation. As soon as that changes, I could see Colombia having an incredibly bright future.
Very interesting comments. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Kevin Howlett here on Colombia Calling to continue our talk about the upcoming presidential election.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control healthcare, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
What does your dream job look like? Is it spending an hour or more every morning, every night, stuck in traffic? Is it staying up late to finish that report for the boss? No, didn't think so. So where are the opportunities for the entrepreneurs with a sense of adventure? Where are the businesses for sale that allow you to be your own boss on your own terms, wherever in the world you choose? OverseasVentures.com. Overseas Ventures is the first business listing directory of its kind. Our focus is to provide a personalized experience for those looking to invest in overseas opportunities and start living their dream of the overseas ventures lifestyle. With everything from tiki bars on the beach in Belize to boutique hotels in the warm, sunny Caribbean to online opportunities for those who want to live out of their suitcase and just travel the world. Overseas Ventures is the first website dedicated solely for the global entrepreneur in mind. Check us out now at OverseasVentures.com to dream, own, and live a new life abroad.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is the final segment of the show, Columbia Calling, with me, your host, Richard McCall. We're talking to Kevin Howlett of ColumbiaPolitics.com. And very basically, Kevin's been telling it how it is, you know, telling us how it is here in Colombia regarding the politics. And you know, it's all a little bit negative, but we finished on an upbeat point.
We did.
Because in truth, this is the generation. There's never been a generation, I believe, that's more informed and more aware and more able to, you know, to look for and receive the information, let's say, now, you know, in today's world about what really is going on in their country. You know, if we're talking 10, 20 years back, of course, the levels of communication were such that no one would know. You would just hear it, you know, it would be Chinese whispers from mm-hmm. village to village. But today, you know, you can actually genuinely find the news and find the information that perhaps will educate you further into what's going on. So I think this is a very, very positive point that Kevin ended the last segment on, and I'm glad we had it, because I'm starting to get the feeling that, you know, the Santos government would you know, black out this show. You know, I think we'd end up being censored or taken off the air or something or other. Who knows, you know? But now we've got 12, 13 minutes left, and it's time to talk about the reappointed mayor of Bogota, Gustavo Petro. We have to talk about it, because I think there are people out there who might have seen the piece in the New York Times, might have read something on the BBC, but really don't understand what went on. As a political commentator, Kevin, the mic is yours.
Wow, it's a very difficult thing to do, to explain the chaos, the circus, Gabriel García Márquez, who tragically, because he was 87, but very sadly died last week and left us with an amazing legacy of, I think he's the best writer of certainly our years on this planet. The political situation with Petro would look strange and bizarre even on the pages of García Márquez. Petro has been in, out, threatened by all sorts of different people from being removed. He's been reappointed yesterday by President Santos after being kicked out of office. He was kicked out of office officially, if you like, in December last year by the Inspector General. He decided that through a legal technicality that he would be remove a democratically elected mayor from his office, which is never a great thing. Now it took 4 months or so, to go through the process as Petro quite rightly, quite understandably, appealed that decision. But eventually, at the start of last month, the President Santos decided that no, he was going to remove Petro. He put in an interim mayor, Rafael Pardo, who was the Labour minister. Then he, earlier on this week, he put in place Maldonado, one of Petro's close aides, had worked very closely with Petro for one day, and then the court decided, actually, no, Santos, you have to reinstate Petro again. It sounds absolutely absurd, but Bogota in the last month has had four mayors: Petro, Pardo, Maldonado, and Petro again. It's impressive that a capital city of 8 million people that's responsible for 33% of the nation's GDP is capable of going through mayors at that sort of rate. It's extraordinary.
But it's not only extraordinary. I mean, you, obviously, as you said, it would look unreal on the pages of a Gabriel García Márquez novel. But at the same time, what worries me most is now putting him back has just created this sort of even greater sense of instability. Because now I feel, and I think I've read, that Petro will be faced with further sort of accusations and attacks and so on.
Well, that's right, and the Inspector General can appeal that decision. It's an endless quagmire of legal absurdities. The problem, I think, is partly the fact that the Colombia is a nation of lawyers, but no one can decide whether he was removed illegally or not. And it's bizarre that you have the judiciary acting above and beyond the executive. I always think that the executive should be the ones that decide. They're the ones that are democratically elected. They have the mandate. But unfortunately, Santos has been unable to make a decision on this with any great degree of certainty, directness, and making a decision, sticking with it. No one really knows. And this is, you listen to any of the commentators, and there's all sorts of potential legal avenues that Petro could take, or the Inspector General could take, or we as citizens could take. And I'm afraid we're just going to have to suffer another year or so of instability, which is not great for Bogota, not great for Colombia. Look, Bogota has had three terrible mayors. The last great mayor was Peñalosa, and he was a very good mayor. He did some very good things, not everything brilliantly, but it hasn't built on that legacy. And now we see problems of the public transport, we see problems of the of health. Yesterday we were, well, today, even through today, 70% of the capital city was without water. And that was 24 hours without water. Just little things like that indicate that at the top level, there's a lack of continuity, a lack of real governance and administration. And unfortunately, with the Petro saga, that's just made things worse. And we're going to have, I suspect, another year of that. But great, because Petro will probably run for election in 2018. And the way things are here, it could well be that he could be president in 2018. As I said, this country is like a García Márquez novel. That's why we all love it, but it can be a very bizarre place to be as well sometimes.
If you take it from that level, I mean, you know, this scandal in Bogota, this sort of flip-flopping back and forwards, Petro back in, it's given him the national coverage that he needs to be someone supported for a 2018 election. But rather than that, I just don't understand. I mean, I'm not going to make any bones about this either. I was against his ousting, not because I'm pro Petro, because he was a democratically elected public official, the mayor of Bogota, and we'd had bad mayors, etc. And then the other thing that sort of appealed to me, that was a problem for me about this, you know, and whenever I said, listen, he shouldn't be ousted on this technicality, the sort of fervent anti-Petristas would say, oh yeah, but it was the lowest turnout in an election for this. Well, that's your fault. That's not his fault for being elected on a low turnout. Had you wanted to vote for someone else, had you voted for others, it wouldn't be in that situation. I don't see that as an argument. But so I was against his ousting, but I'm against his reappointment. I thought that was something that was done and dusted. I thought, okay, now let's move forward. I'm against it. What happened. It was wrong. Santos ignored the International Court of Human Rights to begin with, and now turns around, and because the sort of Superior Tribunal Court of Bogota says that it was against International Court of Human Rights, he's now then said he's been, his hand has been forced by the courts to put him back. So not only does this put, let's say, petulant Petro back into power, it makes Santos look even weaker.
It makes him look totally moulded by events rather than being able to shape them. You know, events dear boy, events was one of our great prime minister's phrases. And this is the problem. It looks like he's been buffeted around by what's happening and unable to make a decision. I think with Petra, I would definitely echo that in terms of it was absolutely wrong to remove a democratically elected politician on a legal technicality. I mean, if it was a crime, if it was a something penal, then perhaps, yeah. Well, definitely actually, but let's be categorical about that, but not on a legal technicality. It was an administrative error. Now, I, as you well know, I'm not exactly a fan of Petra. In fact, I think he's possibly the worst politician I've ever had the misfortune to live under the control of, if you like. But nevertheless, he was elected. He was elected. But I don't know. What are we going to have? What's going to be the upshot of it? I don't know. And I think this is, you mentioned the point about he is going to be well positioned for 2018. If you look at the polls before he was removed from office or before this came there, he was languishing. He had, he was President Santos level of support. And unsurprisingly, he's got a lot of sympathy. And unsurprisingly, people say, well, actually, I'd rather side with Petro elected than with the Inspector General who's appointed. I'd rather side with them, and I can well understand that. Now, Petro has done very little for the benefit of Bogota, but, you know, that's not my decision to make. I don't think he should be removed just because I don't agree with him. I think, you know, he was elected, he should serve his full term, unless there is a movement to vote him out, which there was a movement to vote him out. And I think the only thing that's happened, the upshot of all this circus, all this debacle, really, and legal absurdities, is that Petro now is in a very good position, and all he has to do for the next year is just defend himself, not govern, not do anything for Bogota, and in 4 years' time run a campaign to be elected on the back of a united left. And that is what he'll probably do.
Hey, he's not a stupid man.
Oh, he's certainly not that.
He's not a leader of men, and he's not a great orator, but he is incredibly erudite in the way he knows how to play the system and the laws and everything. And I want to just put this into an international sort of, let's say, international image of this. It's if you were to say what had happened to Petro, if you were to say to transfer it to New York, let's say,
so
our listeners out there could understand it more. How would you sort of translate it?
Well, imagine Bloomberg, although Bloomberg was very good, so it's not comparable in that sense. But imagine Mayor Bloomberg was impeached for an administrative error. He made a bit of a balls up on some contract.
Yeah,
or he made a decision that was not perfect. He was removed from office after 6 months of legal wrangling. Then you had a replacement mayor, then you had another replacement mayor, and then Bloomberg was back in his post after 4 weeks. That's basically what it would look like. So you would have a major city, the most important city perhaps. I don't know whether New York is the most important city economically for these states, but I imagine it probably is. Everything is incredibly important in terms of running. You need a manager to run it. But it's been totally, it's not had that leader in charge for that long, for 6 months or a year even. So imagine the sword of Damocles was hanging over the head of Bloomberg for a year, and he was unable to do his job. Then he was removed, then he was replaced, then he was replaced, then he was back in.
And then became president.
And then became president. That's kind of what you're looking at, yeah.
Oh, wow, it's
bonkers. It's unfathomably bonkers.
It's because I just didn't believe it. Almost, you know, the other day when he was reappointed, I almost didn't believe it had gone that far. It's magic realism, as we keep on using any term.
Well, I always say about Garcia Marquez that, he's most famous. Well, he was originally famous for being a journalist,
yes.
And I think his books are a form of journalism. They're just talking about what actually happens with a twist of humour, but it's effectively what Colombia is like at sometimes. And I repeat, that's partly why we love this place, because it's so bonkers.
It is bonkers. But thank you, Kevin. Thank you for your time on the show. Thank
Pleasure.
You for providing us with these invaluable insights, and hopefully the people out there have followed our diatribes today. But it's I would say, on the whole, things are positive. On the whole, you know, that there was recognition of the illegality of the ousting is positive. I would say, on the whole, that the election's coming up. We've got an informed, younger generation who, hopefully will use their vote. So check out Kevin's writing. That's www.columbia-politics.com. Get in touch with us at Columbia Calling Radio colombiacalling@gmail.com or colombiacalling@gmail. You know, if you want to hear of anyone being interviewed or if you've got any comments not too vicious, please send them in. And so we've been talking to Kevin Howlett. Thank you once again. This is Colombia Calling.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.